We have one official holiday that is all about being thankful for what we have. But research shows that cultivating an attitude of gratitude every day can change your life. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last year, I talked with James Autry about his book, Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have, a book that touched a lot of people. Now, he's written a follow-up along with the help of his wife, former Iowa Lieutenant Governor Sally Peterson. The new book is Choosing Gratitude 365 Days a Year. This hour, we'll talk about practicing gratitude every day. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Just over a year ago, I sat down with James Autry to talk about his book, Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. Jim is a former Fortune 500 executive and magazine editor who's chosen to live a very different life in recent years, focusing on writing, lecturing, and helping others. His book touched a lot of people, so many people that he decided to embark on a follow-up. But this time, he enlisted the help of his wife, former Iowa Lieutenant Governor Sally Peterson. The new book is Choosing Gratitude 365 Days a Year, and they are both here with me today. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Charity.
And good morning, Sally.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for coming today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Well, Jim, tell me, after the last book was published and you were talking to a lot of people about it, you talked with Bill Moyers about it on television, and of course that reached a lot of people. When did the idea for this follow-up start to come?
Well, so many people told me they were using the first book for daily meditations or daily practice of some sort. It was surprised me because it's not written that way. It's just, you know, as you know. So I called my publisher in January or early February, and I said, well, maybe we should consider doing a day book. Call it 365 Days of Gratitude. Well, so often publishers are cool and a bit standoffish when you offer them an idea. But he said, I love it. Let's see if we can get it out for Christmas, which meant a very, very short deadline.
Right.
So he gave me a deadline. I said, I can't do that. He said, okay, June. So I said, all right, I can do it by June. Well, Sally and I, we really wanted to work together and had worked together in the past. And she's a good writer and a good editor. So I decided to ask her to join me in this. And your reaction, Sally, was what?
Well, you know, I decided I needed to think about it a little bit.
She said, you just don't want to have to do 365 by yourself.
I've been through this writing exercise with Jim before, where he's very enthusiastic when the book starts, but he gets about halfway through and it gets a little tougher to come up with the ideas for a book. This is his 12th book, and
right.
It's my first. But I didn't say yes right away. I decided, I wanted it not to be a detriment to the marriage. So I decided I would write three or four, let him read them. And depending on how active his red pen was, I'd decide whether or not this was should be a joint effort. He liked those first four. And so I said, yeah, all right, we'll do this together.
All right. Well, and Jim, let's go back to the first book, because you and I, again, we talked a little over a year ago about how that book came about. And you talked a lot about how you spent time practicing gratitude on your daily walks. How did that first book come about? Why did you decide you wanted to write about gratitude in the first place?
Well, the daily walk was one that I did, and I sort of reiterate what I told you, that I'd go out and walk, which I was on doing for health reasons and not for meditative reasons, but for health reasons. And I'd go out and get all agitated about the war and the politics and what was going on. And I'd come in and I was thinking, you know what? I don't think this is what a walk is supposed to do, get you all agitated. So I kept trying to figure out what to do to make it more meditative. Sally suggested things and it's true. I went out one morning, and there had been thunderstorms. The air was very fresh. the birds were singing, the squirrels were playing, and I just sort of unconsciously said, thank you. And then I thought, well, that maybe is what the walk should be. So from that became my gratitude walk. And it takes work to do that because you walk along and your mind will wander. So I would just bring it back and point to something that I was grateful for. It could be the sun on the sycamore trees or squirrels playing or people walking their dog. And I would just think, yes, that's a source of gratitude. So that became a meditative practice for me. And from there, the book sort of bloomed.
And there has been a lot of research about gratitude and a lot of anecdotal evidence as well that a practice of gratitude, a daily attitude of gratitude, it can change how you feel about your life, how you feel about yourself, but it can actually change how your brain functions, some scientists say. It strikes me that, you know, there are people who are sort of naturally optimistic or naturally pessimistic. Those who are naturally optimistic may tend toward practicing gratitude anyway. Yeah. Where do you think you fell? Do you think you fell into that sort of a natural optimist camp?
No, I tend to be somewhat skeptical and somewhat pessimistic. I'm married to the world's most optimistic person.
Well, that was my next question.
She wakes up in the morning smiling. I don't.
So this is the kind of thing that comes a little more naturally to you, Sally?
Maybe in a sense, but I'll tell you, the actual experience of writing this really increased my, awareness of looking for things in my life that I should feel gratitude for, and then actually a feeling and expression of that. We would write separately. We each have home offices, and so we'd do our writing during the day, and then at the end of the day, we'd have a glass of wine, and he would read his entries to me. I'd read mine to him. And that in and of itself was such a great shared experience. And because you're needing to come up with ideas for 365 of these written entries, you're just going through the day thinking consciously all the time about, gee, what am I grateful for? What does this particular thing I'm looking at or seeing or doing remind me of that I should talk about as an incidence of feeling gratitude?
So the process of writing this changed how you felt?
It actually did. It really increased my own sort of awareness and alertness to seeing things and thinking about things that I feel gratitude for.
Yeah, it worked that way for me too. That the process of constantly being in an attitude of awareness of what are the things for which I can feel grateful right now, and that has been a residual value of that book because I still go through the day that way.
And I think that's why one of the things that we decided early on was that as we wrote the entries, and most of these are experiences from our own lives, that we would end each one with a call to the reader to take some kind of action. So it isn't enough just to say, well, here's something that I'm grateful for, but it needed to also be something that we could ask the reader to
relate to.
Yeah.
And there are small actions that they can take.
Yes.
I mean, for example, one of the ones very early in the book is an exercise on January 5th. And each of these entries has a date.
Yes.
So the idea is that a person would start reading this on January 1st and just read that section every day?
Yes, but people have been cheating.
Well, I cheated, that's for sure.
And also people can start any day. You know, you can buy this book today and start reading on December 5th.
But the idea is that each one of these is an entry for a day of the year,
although
leap year could be a problem, but it'll work that out.
Well, yeah, I thought about that, but 2014 is not one.
Right. So maybe there's another book in the future, 366 days a year. Right?
Don't even say it.
But, you know, very early in the book, one of the examples of one of these exercises is on January 15th, and the exercise is to list seven people that you want to express gratitude to this week and then do that one each day of the week. Is that something, Sally, that you also decided to do?
you know, I can't say that I, you know, this is one that Jim wrote.
Okay.
And you can tell on each of these, we put our initials behind them. We thought it was sort of helpful to know in some sense.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, whether this is a woman's voice, a man's voice. And we talk a lot about our families. So just so people weren't too confused, we put initials. So, you know, that's one of Jim's. I can't say that I've specifically taken his advice, but, you know, very moved by the things that he's written, and it was a wonderful thing to share these as we did
so,
the writing.
So, Jim, how about you? Has that been something that you've done?
I would say I don't hit it all 7 days a week, but I do try to do it. I try to be conscious of at least saying thank you or expressing gratitude or saying I really appreciate what you're doing in a way that expresses gratitude, but maybe not in that exact word. I was at a restaurant the other day, and this waitress gave me, some, I thought, particularly good service and was very pleasant and upbeat and just sort of radiated a kindness and a happiness. And I said to her, you know, I really appreciate your upbeat attitude. So that was expressing gratitude for that.
Right. And that kind of comment can really change somebody's day.
I hope so.
I know from personal experience that kind of comment can really change somebody's day. So when you imagine people reading this book and going through it slowly, I went through it very quickly. And one of the things that, as I mentioned, I loved about it was the fact that you did have your initials on each entry. And I almost felt like I was just having a conversation with the two of you and getting to know each of you in a little bit different way. Every entry, and you know, like I said, I did cheat. I haven't had a year to read the book. But you imagine somebody going through and really using this as a daily meditation, just 2 or 3 minutes of time spent with you and then with their own thoughts.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have some friends in Des Moines. We were at a holiday event last week, and they took us aside and said that they do it every morning. They start it every morning. They open the book and take one of them and talk about it.
Nice.
So, yes, and I don't know how widespread that is. I expect people read ahead, but I hope that they come back to the day.
Well, we are going to take a short break, and we'll come back, and I would love each of you to read a sample from the book so we can get an idea of what kinds of thoughts you lead us to think about. We'll come back in just a moment. We also want to hear from you this hour. How do you practice gratitude? And how has it changed the way you think about yourself or your life? Please share your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm here this hour with Jim Autry and Sally Peterson, who have written together now the book Choosing Gratitude, 365 Days a Year, Your Daily Guide to Grateful Living. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guests today are James Autry and Sally Peterson. They have written together a new book called Choosing Gratitude, 365 Days a Year, Your Daily Guide to Grateful Living. Some of you may remember that I spoke with Jim last year about his book, Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. And he's an author of many books. He's also a former Fortune 500 executive and magazine editor. Many of you know Sally Peterson, of course, because she was our lieutenant governor for many years in the state of Iowa. And in this book, they share daily practices for focusing on the things that we're grateful for in life. And Sally, I would love for you to read an example for us.
Thank you, Charity. I'll read one from actually like just this past weekend. This is November 30th, the entry. I believe in Christmas miracles. I experience one every year about this time. On the weekend following Thanksgiving, we customarily put our holiday decorations up. We have a 20-year-old artificial tree that is slowly but surely dropping its artificial needles. Still, each year, we pull it out of the box, thinking this will be its last. Our son Ronald joins us for the ritual trimming and has become especially proficient at assembling the tree. Jim is the master of stringing the lights, occasionally swearing at burned-out bulbs as he goes. Once the lights are on, we all join in adorning the tree with our odd assortment of ornaments. We have accumulated scores of them over the years. Some are simple handmade ornaments from Ronald's early school years. There's an angel made from cotton balls from a Mississippi farm, a small painted gourd Jim's mother made, some starch tatted snowflakes my mother crocheted, a dozen ceramic and wooden painted birds we collected over the years, and some old-fashioned red, shiny, and gold ornaments that have seen better days. Each year, we open the boxes of stored ornaments, stare at this jumble of ragtag items, and wonder how we can possibly make our tree presentable with this pitiful menagerie. But we forge ahead, trimming the tree together while we listen to Christmas tunes and sip eggnog. And then it happens, the Christmas miracle. The finished tree is magnificent, and the motley collection of ornaments is now mysteriously beautiful to behold. What simple holiday traditions in your life are transformed into miracles through eyes of gratitude? So that was the entry for November 30th.
Oh, that's wonderful. And actually, we talked a lot about that yesterday on Talk of Iowa. We were talking about meaningful holiday traditions and how every single one of those ornaments, I'm sure, carries a memory for you.
That's absolutely true, and I think that's true for so many families.
Absolutely. Jim, would you like to read an entry?
Yes. This was unplanned, but mine is about miracles as well. September 21st, and it starts with a quote from Albert Einstein. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. I used to want miracles, but they were more often than not material miracles, more money, a big car, and so on. As I got older and the realities of life closed in, I wanted my brother's cancer to be cured, my son's autism to be cured, and so on. I was disappointed that none of that happened, or so I thought. My brother lived 2.5 good years after the diagnosis, and he and I had many good times. My son graduated from a 2-year college course for people with intellectual disabilities, has a good job, has his own apartment, plus a dog, friends, and a wonderful girlfriend. My problem in wanting the miracles was that I was not recognizing the miracles that were already there. This doesn't mean I don't still miss my brother or that I don't still wish for more progress by my son. It only means that by trying to live a life of gratitude, I realize that every blessing I count is, in fact, a miracle. Try counting your own miracles today.
That's beautiful. Jim Autry and Sally Peterson reading from their new book, Choosing Gratitude, 365 Days a Year. I also want to mention that they will be reading tonight at 7 o'clock at Nubo Books in Cedar Rapids. They'll also be appearing on Sunday, December 8th at 2 p.m. at Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Is that the... Okay. All right. That's the 8th. I got it. I'm questioning the calendar. You suggest for people to think about the things that they are grateful for. But for each of you, it sounds like the act of writing these things down was really a powerful act for you. Do you think that there's something in putting pen to paper and putting your thoughts together so that you can write about it that almost makes the act more powerful?
Certainly crystallizes things for you, yes. So, you know, you can be thinking about something, and then if you have to put it into a context that that tells of gratitude, I think you think about it in a new way.
Philosophically, I think that anything we set ourselves to do has the potential and the power to transform us. That's true of our work. It's true of our love life. It's true of our faith life, and true of parenting. So I think the idea of engaging this process of writing this book of gratitude really sensitized me beyond what I had been about the things every day. And when you, as Sally said, when you live every day looking for things to be grateful for, what you discover is there's a lot you hadn't thought about that you should be grateful for every day.
Do you find, Jim, you were saying you sort of are a natural cynic. Do you find yourself responding in different ways to situations than you used to respond?
Absolutely. You know, I tell people that I'm, you know, I don't have an education in business. I wasn't a major in business, and a lot of my business friends say that's obvious. But my degree is in journalism, so I'm a trained and educated skeptic. But this process has changed me. Being the father of a child with autism, being married to Sally has changed me, but also this process has changed my outlook so that I don't – my automatic response isn't skepticism.
He's a recovering pessimist. One day at a time.
Right.
It's not only the process of looking for the good in people, as I say, look for the divine in people, but also looking for the good in other things that are in life.
How long do you think it took you once you started trying to be mindful and practice gratitude on those daily walks? How long do you think it took you before it really became a natural habit, not something you had to make yourself do?
Well, to begin with, it's not an event or an episode. It is a process, and so it's still ongoing. But I would say if I looked back 3 years ago, I'm a fairly different person in my outlooks on things. And so, I don't know, maybe a year or two, but it's still ongoing.
And once it started getting easier and being something that came to you naturally, how do you think that changed you?
Well, one way is I consciously make a decision. If I'm feeling sort of grouchy, you know, even in traffic, you know, I make myself think, what's here that I should be grateful for? Well, just the being here is the start. So I work at it. It's probably harder for me than it is for Sally, but I do work at it. I'm conscious of it, and I'm very mindful about it.
Now, as we were talking about earlier, this comes a little more naturally to you, Sally, with just a sort of a natural optimism. Have you found that writing these entries and thinking about gratitude in maybe a more serious way has changed you?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that has had the most impact on both Jim and me is our son Ronald, because he has a disability. And all the people involved in his life, he's now 30 years old, so he's had a lot of years in which he has struggled with the challenges of autism and had so much help from so many people in overcoming challenges or just meeting his, you know, everyday issues. That has taught us a lot of gratitude. And in fact, that's the dedication in our book. We dedicate this book to our son, Ronald, who teaches us how to live in gratitude every day. And I think that has been a big factor in our life. And several of the things that we've written about in the book, you know, are stories that have to do with the goodness that has come out as a result of people responding to his need.
Well, and it strikes me, for example, you wrote about how Ronald loves to do puzzles and how his approach to doing puzzles is completely different from your approach to doing puzzles. Maybe you don't need to find it and read it, but just describe for us what you mean.
Yeah, I think, you know, when he's doing a puzzle and he loves to do jigsaw puzzles and big ones, you know, a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle is sort of his norm. But he takes the puzzles and just tries to fit each one individually. He doesn't pay attention to the picture. So he's not looking for matching colors or, you know, what's the picture of and, you know, where do I put these together? He just does them one at a time, you know, turning them until he finds a fit. And I think he's every bit as successful as I am. I'm looking at the picture and, you know, trying to figure it out. And to me, that conceptually is how we view the world. I mean, he doesn't generalize well. That's typical of autism. But, you know, just sort of a, you know, try one thing, try another. Somehow it works for him.
Focus on the details.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and that actually a puzzle piece is the national symbol for autism.
Right.
It's a puzzling disability. And it's not unusual for children with autism to love to do jigsaw puzzles in that very way.
Yeah, his girlfriend loves to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine. And you said in the book that he for a long time only wanted to do it himself. But but now you sit down with him. He invites you to sit down and do the puzzles with him. I can imagine that at first it could be a little frustrating when you're trying to do the puzzle and someone has such a very different approach. I love your perspective on it. Did it take you some time to reach that perspective?
Well, you know, we've changed Ronald and Ronald has changed us, and both in very, very good ways. I do have one about a bookstore incident with Ronald that,
Let me just intervene with I had a gratitude episode last night. Ronald talked us into going to a bar where a person he went to high school with was playing in a band. Well, this person had helped Ronald. He was a percussionist. Ronald was a percussionist in the high school band. This guy was a percussionist and very good. And he helped Ronald immensely during the halftime shows and teaching him the thing. And we were there with this young man playing in this three-piece rock and roll band, playing the drums. And I sat there, and he came over during break, and I found myself saying, I am so grateful to you for helping Ronald as you did in his high school years. You know, his reaction was, oh, he's a great kid. Well, that was a daily episode thing that happened quite unexpectedly.
Wonderful. Well, and Sally, would you read your passage?
Sure. My son's everyday life experiences are a constant reminder of the goodness in the world. An acquaintance told me about an instance she observed at a bookstore where Ronald was shopping with a friend. He had just reached the front of the line with a couple of CDs in hand, which he had carefully selected. It was then that he discovered he didn't have enough money to pay for them. Like many people with a cognitive disability, he found the disappointment and disruption in plans too much to handle. He was visibly upset. A man in line behind Ronald saw his distress and quietly stepped up to help. The stranger took out his wallet, handed the store clerk a $20 bill, and the transaction was promptly completed. I doubt that Ronald knew enough to even thank his rescuer, but I hope the gentleman knows how much his good deed was appreciated. Have you witnessed or experienced the kindness of a stranger? Are you grateful to those who help someone in need?
We also want to hear from individuals this hour. We're talking a lot about how the two of you practice gratitude, but we also want to hear from you. Share your gratitude practices with us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this email from Lynn. She says, when my two now grown children were babies, I bought each a large picture calendar every year and nearly every night wrote something they had done that day. For a Christmas present when my son was in high school, a friend gave me a day-by-day calendar, which for some reason I decided to write something good that happened to me or our family every day. That year, our son became mysteriously quite ill and was finally diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis after several frightening months. I believe the habit of writing in the calendar helped me through that time. I continue to find things to be thankful for almost every day. Almost, she said.
What a wonderful example of something you could do as a practice on a daily basis, writing on your calendar.
Well, and you must hear from people who tell you how they have discovered the power of this action. What are some of the stories that people tell you? Because I'm sure you've heard from a lot of people who read your last book, Jim.
Well, yeah, and they all sort of fall into a pattern of something they've decided to do every day, having to do with gratitude. And then I hear stories about people who've just witnessed things that have touched them and made them feel grateful. And there are plenty of just sort of personal things that people come into. I even had the man that runs the produce department in the grocery store tell me about his own sense of gratitude connected to the book. And he's was grateful to have a job, he said, you know.
So. Several people who have had serious illnesses have said, have told us that Jim's book was really helpful to them, the previous book, and that they did use it sort of like a meditation.
Right. At a time when it's so easy to focus on the negative.
Yeah.
We have this email from Curtis. This is a more active approach to spreading the message of gratitude. He said, I was cold, tired, hungry, thirsty, and feeling lost one evening in a strange town. I walked into a local bookstore in Spring Green, Wisconsin, looking for directions. I was accosted by several elderly women with smiles as big as Buicks. After friendly hellos, they thrust some stamped vintage postcards into my hands and told me to write thank yous to people in my life who would appreciate it. They took my email address and have continued to hound me in the friendliest way to keep it up. The Thursday Thank You Girls do this in Spring Green on a regular basis. It's wonderful and bears copying.
Yeah, gratitude warriors.
That's great. Thursday, thank you, girls.
That's wonderful.
I like that.
We are going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us how you practice gratitude and how it's affected your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also post on our Facebook page or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm talking with Jim Autry and Sally Peterson today about the new book they've written together, Choosing Gratitude 365 Days a Year, Your Daily Guide to Grateful Living. They'll be reading tonight at 7 o'clock at Nubo Books in Cedar Rapids, and then also on Sunday at 2 p.m. at Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me today, the authors of the new book, Choosing Gratitude, 365 Days a Year, Your Daily Guide to Grateful Living. And the authors of the book are people that many Iowans are familiar with. Jim Autry is an author of a number of books, including a book published last year that really touched a lot of lives called Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. He's also a former Fortune 500 executive and magazine editor. And Sally Peterson, many people know as the former Iowa Lieutenant Governor as well. She's also an advocate for a number of issues that are important to her as well. And together, they're also married, they wrote this book, 365 Daily Meditations on Gratitude. And we would love to hear from you this hour. If you practice gratitude, let us know about what you do and why you do it and how it's changed you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Marin is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Marin.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What would you like to share?
Well, I wanted to thank Jim and Sally for the opportunity to bless my life. And it was so awesome because I went to their reading at the library in Des Moines, and of course, thoroughly enjoyed it, bought the book, brought it home, have been reading it daily, and my son lives up in Minnesota, and he's 29, he's not married, and, you know, it's one of those things where you just want to stay connected, but you don't know how to do it. So from this book, I was able to think, I am going for the holidays every day, send a blessing to him of gratitude of what he means in my life, and I asked him to reflect and possibly send one word or a couple sentences back to me. And so we've been doing that.
Oh, that's been really neat.
Yeah, what a wonderful practice.
Have you been surprised at how the kinds of responses that you've gotten, Marin?
Yes. One of the situations was both of our parents have passed away, but we have an ornament on the tree. And so Corey said one of his favorite things is when we decorate the tree and we put the ornaments out with Grandpa and Grandma's pictures on it, how much that means to him. I was just like, oh.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, Marin, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Yeah,
thank you too.
Thank you,
Marin.
And you can join our conversation as well, 866-780-9100. We have a tweet from Mara who says, thank you for today. I went to high school with your son, Ronald, and played in band with him, and it's been too long since I thought of all he taught me. So there's a nice, very personal reminder today. We have this email from Kelly in Iowa City. She says, I try to enjoy all the little things I run across during my day. Maybe it's a clever saying on a business sign or an eagle flying close overhead. After listening to the program this morning, I realized that it's my way of enjoying the day and being grateful for the world around me. And maybe all the silly Facebook posts are society's way of enjoying the world and sharing it with friends, even though most people don't realize it's their way of being grateful for the mundane events in their life.
Well, that's a very non-cynical way to look at it. by Facebook, isn't it? That's good.
Well, and it is interesting, and I spend a lot of time on Facebook. It's interesting that the people who use their statuses and their posts to share humor and celebrate the things in life. But there are many people who use it to complain about the things in their life and to focus on the negative as well. But I'm sure for many people, it's part of that practice of writing something down and sharing it with others.
It is a way to share good news, and in a way that is an expression of gratitude.
Absolutely. And do you think, a lot of people keep gratitude journals.
Yes.
And a lot of people write these things down or just think about them on their own. Do you think there's something about sharing them with other people, again, that might make the experience more powerful?
I do, because I think articulating it, even if you feel it, I think articulating it makes it more powerful. Some of these things in this book, that once I wrote them, I realized that they were more a source of gratitude than I would have expected them to be.
Hmm. Can you give me an example?
Well, let me read you something.
Okay.
September 24th. I heard the news last week that Burl Armstrong, an old high school classmate, had died. Another classmate got in touch to ask if I remembered him. I did more than that. Burl had a role in changing my life years ago. He was in the school band and persuaded me to join, even though I did not yet play an instrument. But I taught myself the clarinet with coaching from teachers, and as a result, years later, I received a band scholarship to college. That experience in turn introduced me to the world of classical music, which continues to enrich my life today. Thus, it is with affection and deep gratitude that I do indeed remember Burl. Has there been someone in your life who helped you in a way that has lasted until now? If you can be in touch with that person, express your gratitude today. And that made me think that I was not in touch with Burl. I wish I could have been.
Right. Well, both of you write about, not just Ronald, we've talked a lot about Ronald, both of you write about members of your family. And Sally, you write quite a bit about your mother. And I was telling other people in the office this morning when I was reading the book, I'm like, I want to know more about Sally's mother.
She's a remarkable woman.
Well, I wonder if going back and putting family stories on paper, if that changed the way that you thought about how these stories had shaped you.
In some ways, I think that's true. I also think it has made me want to see more of my siblings. And I already see my parents and want to see my parents a lot. But, you know, it has kind of made me aware that I appreciate my siblings, but I don't spend enough time with them, and that I need to create, opportunities to do that, or at least to exchange, communication with them, whether that's email or a phone call or whatever, that you have to kind of practice it and put it into your life. If it's calling them on a birthday or, inviting them out to lunch or, just whatever it might be, you need to get it into a practice.
Have you, either one of you, been surprised by the hunger people seem to have for this kind of writing and this kind of thinking?
I don't know that I've been surprised, although I've been surprised by people's willingness to express it. You know, the world is very much with us, and the world these days is not so much a source of gratitude. If you just look at the headlines and you just look at all the chatter that's going on, you can think, how in the world, in this environment, can I feel gratitude? So I think that the fact that we say that, it is hard to do, but that you look within and you look closely at your life every day, and that becomes a source of gratitude, and these things reveal themselves to you daily. They keep revealing themselves. I think that has encouraged and inspired people to feel gratitude, and our response convinces me that people were hungry for it.
Some people listening to this who may be natural cynics themselves, might think that it all sounds a little Pollyanna-ish.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm curious, though, because I think that some people think that it's maybe an either-or. You know, either I focus on the positive in life and ignore all of this reality around us, or I live in the real world. How do you balance that? I mean, I'm not saying that the things you're grateful for aren't real, but how do you balance what you're feeling when you read those news stories and those news headlines, because clearly you care about what's going on in the world, with the sense of personal gratitude?
Well, we can participate in the process of citizenship and we can try to change the world, but the world is the world, and we can't daily change the world. We can change our reaction to the world and our response to the world. And I think that looking for things of gratitude that stimulate, inspire gratitude in the midst of all this is the practice itself. I mean, we say it's difficult. It's very difficult. You've got to cut through, get underneath all the negativity that's out there and realize that's not what makes the world go round. What makes the world go round is, shall I say this word, love, and looking for the good in one another. And that means in the people we don't particularly like. And that all of this, I think, is a way of responding to the world in a way that leads you to a happier life and to gratitude. Sally, you
and, well, certainly, you know, neither one of us are advocating that you detach from the world. I mean, we're both advocates and activists and
right. Believe
in engaging, you know, in the public debates and in public policy, all of those things.
You are a politician. you went into the business of changing the world.
But at the same time, you know, you nourish your soul by pausing to take in the things that that you are grateful for. So whether that is, you know, nature or something that comes to you through your senses or it's your relationships with family and friends, all of those things nourish you and prepare you for the battles that you may take on, whether that's in your job or through advocacy or through any number of avenues. So this is not about detaching.
Yeah, and when I'm talking to people about this subject, I say, look, you're not listening to a talk by St. James the Perfect here, and I'm no Pollyanna, but that reaction to the world is what we need to focus on.
Do you think – well, there seems to be – it's a two-way street. I mean, you're talking about all of these things that nourish you, but the act of practicing gratitude, it strikes me, also nourishes – all of those things. It sounds to me like it's caused both of you to invest more in your relationships or even to at least appreciate them, which I'm sure changes the way that you treat people and reaching out to individuals and letting them know how much you care. This clearly it works both ways.
Yeah. Well, I think living in gratitude implies spreading gratitude. And I think that's kind of what happens as a result of the way we now live.
We have a phone call from Des Moines. Terry is on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
James and Sally had mentioned, you know, gratitude. It's the way to live. And when you speak the word aloud, it seems to make it more powerful. Your brain hears it in two different areas. And if you go back to the Bible in Genesis, it says the Word was with God. God is the Word. When we speak things, we bring them closer to us and we spread them. Hmm. We spread the love. And I think that's a wonderful book. I live daily by giving gratitude for all that I have and all that I can do. And I try to spread that to other people.
Good for you.
Thank you, Terry.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you so much for your call. And we are nearly out of time. I wonder if one of you could read another short entry for us before we go today.
Go ahead. I read the last time.
You mentioned my mother, so I'll read this one about my mother, things I've learned from my mother.
All right.
My mother always had the same response when one of her five children woke up complaining that he or she was ill and couldn't go to school. Mom would say, "Get up, get dressed, and if you still don't feel well, you can go back to bed." Somehow, once you were dressed and ready for school, you never felt bad enough to undress and climb back into bed. It was easier just to go to school. I use that same strategy with my child, and I suspect my siblings did with theirs. It has served me pretty well in my own life, too, whether getting myself up and dressed to go to the office or getting prepped and ready to start a new project. My mother was one wise woman. What important lessons did your mother teach you? Have you shared with her your gratitude for her wisdom?
So both of you have had fascinating careers. And Jim, I know you've made a lot of changes in recent years and have really changed the way you live and the things that you focus on. And Sally, since you've been out of office, you've focused a lot on advocacy for children and adults with disabilities. I wonder how surprising is it to you to suddenly be gratitude gurus here in the state of Iowa and around the nation?
Well, it's a big surprise, to tell you the truth. That the first book was just a labor of love that, frankly, I didn't expect a lot of attention to it. And, of course, the Moyers program kind of kicked it into high gear. But well, how do you feel, Sally?
Well, it just was a real pleasure and delight and joy to write a book with my husband. And so it may be the only book I ever write, but I couldn't have wished for a more wonderful experience.
And what is it like now? You're traveling together. You're doing these readings together. What's that experience like?
It's fun. It's fun. We're having the time of our lives, I think.
It keeps us focused on gratitude.
And clearly you make a good team. But you did get a little competitive with each other while you were working on it.
Yes, indeed. Oh, but it was friendly, funny competitiveness. We laughed about it, yeah.
But see who could write the most entries on any given day. And
and particularly who spotted one first.
Right. So if you saw something you were grateful for, you'd call it dibs.
Well,
yeah, that's
and
right.
We had to have ground rules. You know, my family, I got to write about. His family, he got to write about, you know, certain. And then Ronald, we had to divide him
right,
up.
Right, right. You had to share. No choice about that. Well, so what do you think is coming next? I mean, Sally, you're skeptical about writing another book. But Jim, you're in the habit of writing books. So what do you think?
Well, after every book, I say that's the last one. And this is number 12. But my publisher has been talking to me about doing a book of new and selected poetry, a sort of an anthology of my own work.
So I'm really encouraging him to do that.
She's been on me about writing more poetry.
He needs to write more poetry.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Thank you, Charity.
I've spent the hour with James Autry and Sally Peterson. Together, they have written the book Choosing Gratitude, 365 Days a Year, Your Daily Guide to Grateful Living. They will be reading together tonight at 7 o'clock at Nubo Books in Cedar Rapids. They'll also be at Beaverdale Books in Des Moines on Sunday at 2 p.m. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And on the subject of gratitude, we are going to have our traditional, now second annual, holiday show where we focus on the people in your life who have changed you, helped you in some way, or maybe you've seen them help others, those unsung heroes. And we'd love to hear your story. We might possibly use it on the air. Send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.